Hi, this is Jen. It's Friday, August 21st, and I'm reading today's edition of the Attleboro Sun Chronicle. Crossing Guard Gap. Attleboro Police Chief says shortage could leave some school posts uncovered. Police are warning parents that a crossing guard shortage may leave some city intersections and crossings unstaffed this school year. Over the past few years, the police department has struggled to recruit and retain enough crossing guards to staff all designated locations, Police Chief Kyle Hagney told the Sun Chronicle Thursday. Despite recruitment efforts, the department does not have enough guards to cover every post. We need to prepare ourselves for the very real possibility that in the future we may no longer be able to hire enough crossing guards to staff these posts, he said. This is not a direction we want to go, but the continued difficulty in finding qualified applicants means we have to be realistic about the future of the crossing guard program. Current crossing guards will continue to work at assigned locations, and police will especially monitor high traffic areas, Hagney said. Hagney said the shortage is not unique to Attleboro, with communities across the state and country facing similar challenges. Some municipalities have eliminated crossing guard positions, which he said could eventually happen in Attleboro if the trend continues. Calls to police chiefs and school departments in surrounding communities were not returned by press time. Three of Attleboro's 24 posts are vacant, Hagney said. Hagney said he has not yet finalized which posts will go without guards. Traffic conditions around each post and the age of the children crossing will be the main factors considered, he said. Why the shortage? Hagney said staffing problems began about 5 years ago, but this year has been the most difficult because positions have remained unfilled longer than in past years. The number of vacancies has fluctuated. Increasingly, every year it gets worse, he said. Hagney said he believes the shortage reflects a broader trend of businesses and agencies struggling to recruit workers. The job also requires employees to work unusual hours, with guards reporting for a 2-hour shift early in the morning and returning in the afternoon when school lets out. That schedule is not feasible for many people who rely on a 9-to-5 job. Hagney said the hours mean the position usually attracts retirees looking for part-time work and occasionally younger people with more flexible schedules. Encouraging safety precautions. Hagney urged parents and guardians to review pedestrian and traffic safety practices with their children, including looking both ways before crossing, staying alert to traffic, and using designated crosswalks whenever possible. Drivers should use extra caution near schools, crosswalks, and intersections, reduce their speed in school zones, and watch for children who may be crossing without help from a guard, he said. Hagney also urged families to consider carpooling, having students walk together in groups, or organizing a walking school bus with responsible adults to increase student visibility and supervision. Apply to be a crossing guard. The positions are part-time, pay $16.48 per hour, and generally require 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon, Hagney said. Applicants must be reliable, responsible, and able to work with children. Hagney urged anyone interested in applying or anyone who knows someone who may be interested to contact the Human Resources Office at Attleboro City Hall or apply online through the city's website at cityofattleboro.us. Alternative recruitment efforts. The police department has also explored other non-traditional ways to recruit guards, including reaching out to programs that serve older residents. We have even asked the City of Attleboro Council on Aging for assistance through its Senior Tax Abatement Work-Off Program, Hagney said. The program allows eligible older adults to perform service for the city in exchange for a property tax credit of up to $1,000 per household. Participants complete 73 hours of service during the program year. But the effort yielded no interested applicants. We are trying to think outside the box and explore every reasonable option available to us, Hagney said. A rescue, mare, a baby on the way, and a second chance. Norton Horse Rescue Farm saves mares from Texas kill pen. Billy Sunshine, a horse rescued by a Norton farm last week, is pregnant and could give birth any day. Heidi Midas, owner of Smoky Chestnut Farm Rescue in Norton, said Billy, a dark mare, and Raya Sunshine, a gray mare, were brought to Massachusetts last week after being rescued from a Texas kill pen. Smoky Chestnut Farm Rescue, an 11-acre nonprofit farm on Burt Street, was founded in 2012. Its mission is to rescue and provide lifelong care for abused and neglected animals and to encourage education, community, and advocacy for all living creatures by celebrating animals and the human-animal connection. The two mares are staying with Annie Crosby, who owns Mind Aligned Wellness and Equine Services in Rehoboth. Billy arrived in Rehoboth severely thin and malnourished, raising concerns that she could be pregnant. Raya has problems with her front legs and can barely walk. This week, Dr. Sean McPherson of Ocean State Equine Associates in North Scituate, Rhode Island, came to ultrasound Billy, Midas said. Billy is indeed pregnant and she could foal at any time, Midas said. Given Billy's condition, Midas said caregivers are concerned for her and her unborn foal and are praying for a safe delivery. Midas said a camera is monitoring Billy around the clock for changes and caregivers are giving her top-notch nutrition, which she is eating. The vet is on standby and we will do our best to care for Billy and her baby at the farm, Midas said. She and Crosby also have a plan to transport Billy to Meyer Equine Clinic in Rochester, New Hampshire, if she needs more intensive care, Midas said. McPherson believes Billy has had many foals before and is hopeful that her experienced mama body will know what to do and when to do it, Midas said. During the ultrasound, McPherson tried to locate one of the foal's eyes because measuring the eye can help determine how far along the pregnancy is. The baby was active, moving around and even pushing McPherson's arm as he performed the ultrasound, Midas said. Despite his best efforts, however, the little one simply would not cooperate long enough for him to get a good look at an eye, Midas said. While we still don't know exactly how far along Billy is, the baby's activity is a very encouraging sign. Midas and Crosby both believe Billy and her baby might not have survived if they had not been rescued from the kill pen. A truck ride to another auction and slaughter would have quickened their demise, I am sure of that, Midas said. Even amid the uncertainty, Midas said, they are beginning to see changes in Billy. She is already showing signs that she knows she is safe. Her eyes are no longer quite so fearful, and we are beginning to see them soften, Midas said. She is enjoying treats, she is welcoming touch, and beginning to enjoy the love, kindness, and compassion that are surrounding her, she said. As many wait for the baby to be born, Midas said Billy and her foal will stay together. They will have the opportunity to heal, to grow stronger, and to experience the love and security they have been so desperately missing, Midas said. And when that baby arrives, mama and baby will stay together. They will never be torn away from one another. They will have each other, and they will have a safe place to call home, she said. Midas and Crosby thanked everyone who has donated to the rescue mission. We truly could not have done this without you, they said. They and their teams are asking people to continue helping with Billy's medical expenses, saying her care is expensive and will remain extensive. Donations can be made at smokychestnutfarm.com or by mailing checks to Smoky Chestnut Farm, P.O. Box 407, Norton, Mass. 02766. Please continue to keep Billy and her precious baby in your thoughts and prayers. We need you now more than ever. Every prayer, every kind word, every donation, and every bit of loving energy you send their way matters, Midas said. Norton getting new grocery store. Big Y scheduled to open in former Roche Brothers location in 2028. The town may finally be getting a grocery store again. Big Y announced plans Tuesday for a new supermarket in the Great Woods Marketplace at 175 Mansfield Avenue in Norton, slated to open in early 2028. Town officials welcomed the news in a social media post. The site was formerly a Roche Brothers, which shut its doors in June 2020 after 26 years in business. It was the only large grocery store in Norton. The Norton location is part of Big Y's continued expansion across Massachusetts, particularly in the eastern part of the state, according to a news release. In June 2026, Big Y opened a new store in Pembroke, and the family-owned chain is preparing to open another in Saugus. Big Y also plans new locations in Fairhaven and North Dartmouth. Chain celebrating anniversary. The Springfield-based chain is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year with a goal of hitting 100 stores for its 100th anniversary in 2036. The plan is to have 79 stores by the end of this year and to have 83 by the end of 2027. For 90 years, Big Y has proudly served families across New England, and we are excited to continue that tradition in Norton, said Matt DeMar, Vice President of Real Estate and Development, in a statement. As we grow, we remain focused on delivering modern, convenient shopping experiences with the personalized service Big Y is known for. We look forward to welcoming customers from Norton and surrounding communities beginning in 2028. Mutual respect. Former Alabama QBs May, Hurts catch up at practice. Drake May and Jalen Hurts exchanged pleasantries following Thursday's joint practice between the Patriots and Eagles. May and Hurts weren't able to connect the first day, but the Patriots quarterback made a point of finding the Eagles signal caller before he left. "Yeah, I just literally caught him on the way out as he was leaving the field. I'm a big fan of his game," May told reporters following Thursday's workout. "I'm rooting for him." May said he watched Hurts throughout his college career at Alabama, then Oklahoma. "I told him back when I was committed to Alabama back in the day, he was one of the quarterbacks I was watching play there, and then he ended up going to Oklahoma," May said. "But yeah, he's a Super Bowl champ. That speaks for itself." May indicated that Sam Howell, who he played with at North Carolina and remains one of his best friends, was with Philadelphia last year, so we heard quite a few Hurts stories. "I got to know some stories about Jalen and how he works, and I respect him a lot for that," May said. "I'm pulling for him." On Wednesday, Hurts was asked if he had any advice for May on how to handle A.J. Brown. "I think Drake has had a lot of success already, so I don't know what my advice would do," Hurts said. "I just think he needs to continue the progression that he's on. He's already accomplished so many great things in a short time, and I expect more great things to come from him." The Patriots and Eagles are set to square off in a preseason game Saturday night. It's unknown if either quarterback will play, especially given the work completed during the two joint practices. Boston's bullpen overworked Buckles at wrong time. Late struggles cost Sox sweep versus Arizona. From the start of the season, and especially during their six-week run back into contention that began last month, the Red Sox bullpen has been rock solid. Heading into Wednesday's series finale with the Arizona Diamondbacks, Red Sox relievers claimed the best ERA in the big leagues at 2.93. They also led all staffs in whip, strikeout to walk ratio, and opponents' OPS. But no bullpen, no matter how dominant, how deep, is perfect, as the Red Sox were reminded Wednesday afternoon. Locked in a 5-5 tie after six innings, the Red Sox bullpen finally buckled in the 10th. Lefty Giovanni Moran, the fifth Red Sox reliever used in the game, yielded a bloop single and three straight walks, leading to two runs and eventually a 7-6 loss. Beyond Moran's struggles, two variables conspired to do in the Sox. The team was playing for the 16th straight day, and with only two starters going deep in that span, Sonny Gray for seven innings Saturday in Pittsburgh and Peyton Toll, Wednesday's starter, giving them eight innings two turns ago, the relievers were operating on fumes. Making matters worse, the absence of two key high-leverage arms, Garrett Whitlock and Justin Slayton, both currently on the IL with elbow inflammation. It's a matter of mixing and matching with who you have available, said interim manager Chad Tracy. You know you're going to need reinforcements. Indeed, over the last week, the Red Sox have shuffled arms back and forth from Worcester. Raymond Burgos was here, was sent down, returned, and is now back at AAA again. He was replaced on the roster Monday by Wyatt Olds, who made his MLB debut that very night, then pitched again Tuesday. Using him a third straight day, Tracy noted, would have done only in an absolute emergency. Kept in reserve as the game rolled on was lefty Alec Gamboa, here to provide length if the game dragged into multiple extra innings. After using Greg Weissert, Eric Miller, Tyron Guerrero, and Aroldis Chapman, Tracy had little choice but to turn to and stick with Moran. The Sox pushed and pushed and held serve through the late innings, buying themselves a few opportunities to win the game and post a sweep of Arizona. Ultimately, it wasn't to be, as an exhausted, depleted bunch hit the wall after the ninth. Obviously, it's nice to be at the end of that, 16 games in 16 days, said interim manager Chad Tracy. It's nice for the guys to have a day off on Thursday. It's been a gauntlet the 16 days, so everybody gets a day of rest and recovery and come back ready to go. I'm glad it's over. We circled it a little bit over a month ago and said that's going to be a little bit of a gauntlet. Poll. Mass voters back most ballot questions. Voters are supporting a ballot question dictating more widespread public records access and opposing one that would repeal legal recreational marijuana, according to new poll results. Massachusetts voters will see 9 questions on their November ballots after lawmakers chose not to take action on any of them and the state's highest court ruled 2 out of the running. The legislature's Joint Committee on Initiative Petitions review proposed ballot measures and brought forward no recommendations. Of 800 registered voters surveyed between August 5th and August 12th in the UMass WCVPB poll, 55% opposed or were likely to oppose the marijuana proposal, and 33% said they're in support, which poll director Tatish Neteta called unsurprising. It's been a decade since voters legalized the possession, use, distribution, and cultivation of marijuana in Massachusetts, Neteta said, noting that a majority of voters view legalization in a positive light, with only 2 in 10 saying that legalization has been negative for the state. With the campaign for the ballot question still in its nascent stages and 1 in 10 voters remaining undecided, there remains time for the tables to turn and support for repeal to grow, Neteta continued. But with Trump voters 48% and Republicans 45%, the only groups approaching majority support for the ballot question, convincing Massachusetts voters to reverse course on marijuana legalization, appears to be a formidable challenge. Most of the 9 ballot questions are faring well amongst voters. 70% express support or likely support for the question that would uphold the state's firearms law. 59% did so for residential zoning reform, 59% for a change to the state tax revenue limit, 67% for the creation of a state conservation fund, and 69% for Election Day voter registration. The question that would subject the legislature and governor's office to the state's public records laws was the most popular ballot question among voters. Polling showed 84% of voters said they definitely or probably vote for the measure, with just 7% opposing or likely to oppose it. At a time when it's difficult to find anything Democrats and Republicans agree on, transparency in state government comes pretty darn close, poll co-director Raymond LaRaja said. Voters want the governor and legislature subject to similar public records laws that cover state agencies and local governments. A wide coalition across Massachusetts is still aggravated about how the voter-approved law to audit the legislature has been carried out after 72% of voters approved the question in 2024 and lawmakers railed against it. Beacon Hill seems to be going in its own direction when it comes to the transparency-related question on public records. After months of lawsuits and back and forth on the topic, the House in June passed a bill to narrow the scope of the voter-approved legislative audit and to create a formal process to govern public access to legislative records. The Senate in July passed its bill proposing a framework for public access to legislative records. Representatives Alice Peisch, Andy Vargas, and David Muradian, and Senators Cindy Cream, Cindy Friedman, and Kelly Dooner have been tasked with negotiations to come up with a compromise at some point either before or after the November 3rd election. Lawmakers this year have also repeatedly expressed public frustration with the initiative petition process and the volume of proposals in play. A bill in conference addressing ballot question financing disclosure could feature a House proposal to create a special legislative commission to review the entire initiative petition process as laid out in the state constitution. Voters seem unsettled, pollsters wrote, about the question that would implement an all-party primary election system. Of those polled, 51% said they would probably or definitely support the question. Just 45% also said they definitely or probably support a question that would enable Committee for Public Counsel Services employees to collectively bargain again. That question had the largest percentage of undecided voters of the poll at 18%, while 13% said they did not understand it. The poll's margin of error was 4.4%. 50, 25, and 10 years ago this week. A trip down memory lane to this week 50 years ago. North Attleboro Fire Chief John Grimes died suddenly at age 54. A North Attleboro native and a Navy veteran of World War II, Grimes had been with the fire department for 29 years and chief the last seven. He had planned to retire in September 1977. "The countless things he's done for the town will probably never be known," said Mark Fisher, chairman of the Board of Fire Commissioners. "He was dedicated to the town 24 hours a day and 7 days a week." 25 years ago, 17-year-old Jim Renner of Plainville shot a 3-under-par 67 at Highland Country Club in Attleboro to win the Attleboro Area Golf Association Open by 3 strokes over Derek Johnson. He was the youngest ever player to win the tournament at the time. The victory came 18 years after his father, John Buck Renner, also won the AAGA Open. "All I wanted to do every day of the tournament is to put the ball in fairways and make pars," Renner said. Renner would go on to play 3 years on the PGA Tour with his best finish a tie for second at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. 10 years ago, 17-year-old Davis Chatfield of Attleboro won his second straight AAGA Open, firing a 3-under-par 69 at Foxborough Country Club to win by 16 strokes over Adam Bork. A year earlier, he became the youngest AAGA winner, also with a runaway victory. "On the front nine, I just wanted to hit the middle of the greens and make pars," said Chatfield, who was heading to the University of Notre Dame that fall on a golf scholarship. "It was fun to win, but it was even more fun because my brother Brett was in the final group with me, and he's always supporting me. It was special." Chatfield is now in his rookie season on the PGA Tour. Along the way, artist finds inspiration in her DNA. Attleboro Arts Museum's latest community gallery exhibition, Mapping My DNA, a Series of Watercolors by Annie Spilios Scott, is on display through September 19th. Spilio Scott said she has always been inspired by the art of ancient Eurasian civilizations, characterized by brilliant colors and obsessive patterning. She said, "I was not yet cognizant of the fact that many of them are in my DNA." During the pandemic lockdown, she found herself surrounded by family heirlooms and souvenirs of her travels to various global destinations. These, combined with the results of her DNA testing, inspired the series of watercolors, which primarily celebrates women, keepers of cultures and traditions across the world and throughout history. Summer gallery hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Tuesday through Saturday, through September 4th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. starting September 8th. Move over lobster roll. Clam chowder has beaten out lobster rolls as Massachusetts' most nostalgic summer food. A mission for Michael, a specialized mental health and dual diagnosis treatment center providing residential and outpatient care in California, commissioned a survey of 3,011 respondents to identify the regional summer foods that provide the strongest sense of comfort, nostalgia, and connection. The study revealed which dish in each state most feels like home, while also exploring how familiar recipes, shared meals, and seasonal traditions affect people's mood and sense of belonging. When it came to nostalgic foods, Massachusetts' top three were ranked clam chowder at number one, lobster roll at number two, and fried clams, Ipswich style, at number three. From Tri-County to the Supreme Court. Brenna Farrick, a teacher at Tri-County Regional Vocational Technical High School in Franklin, was one of 60 teachers to travel to Washington, D.C. in June to attend the prestigious Supreme Court Summer Institute. Teachers go through a highly competitive application process to be accepted. The Institute, which is in its 31st year, is open to teachers in the fields of law-related and civic education, is co-sponsored by Street Law, Inc. and the Supreme Court Historical Society. Farrick is a lawyer and has been teaching in the Legal and Protective Services Career Program at Tri-County for 9 years. Before teaching, she was a prosecutor. The Institute offers teachers the opportunity to study recent Supreme Court cases in detail and learn innovative teaching methods for conveying this information to students. In-person early voting for the September 1st Massachusetts state primary kicks off Saturday in Attleboro area communities. The special voting will run through Friday, August 28th in most communities. Saturday is also the deadline to register to vote in the election. Communities are holding special voter registration sessions.